Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe and in the world, actually. It's a section about EU days, and this is one now about the 26th of May. It's one of the most negatively consequential days in European history. It's very unknown, it's very important, and I will explain exactly what were the negative consequences of that American decision on the 26th of May, 1924. And that is a long time ago, but it is so important today for our debates. What I'm talking about, it's the so-called Natural Origins Act. That's basically the complete blockage of the American migration system by the American Congress, by the US Congress in 1924. And it was a complete disaster with most tragic consequences. It took over 40 years to repeal it. It had led to the World War II in very concrete terms. And it has led to many other negative consequences ever since. Yeah? And it's the most terrible piece of American legislation ever done. And I hate it. And I don't exaggerate. It's my personal enemy. I'm also personally celebrating the time when it ended. Yeah? It was already repealed a bit, you know, and changed by Truman, the great hero of freedom, because after World War II, he had to make an offer to the Europeans and to open a bit. Yeah, but it was then in 1965, Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson, it was repealed and a better immigration system in the so-called famous Hull-Sella Act, which to this day by the American nativists and by the American extreme right is hated because it opened the American migration system again for Europeans and for many others of the world. And it has led to this enormous rise of American power and to the victory in the world, in the Cold War, and to this enormous economic miracle, because for economy, you need also labor, you need also people, and it's going to lead to enormous kind of rise of American power, which these enemies of American power, the ones who want America withdrawn for the world and just looking inside, they are opposing it, yeah? Because it's then too colorful, too many people, too many ideas, and too many kind of diversity. But diversity, openness, creativity, innovation cannot be based on ethnicity and on the people already satisfied with what they have and quite happy with themselves. No, you need people who want to improve the world, people with fresh ideas, with outside experience and perspectives, yeah, with the additional networks. Yeah, if there is something wrong, then it's because of the present judiciary system, the jurisdiction at a certain place that it cannot regulate and cope very well with newcomers. Yeah, and then we have to change some of our aspects, how we regulate, how we juristic and how we enforce our roles and laws, yeah. But it's not migration itself if it's a problem. That's what I want to say. And now this is many claims. Let me substantiate this and also explain what I exactly mean. America is the country which is amazing continent suddenly opened for European and for migration from everywhere in the world. After the American Revolution. Until then, it was quite limited with American Revolution. There was, of course, the need to find more people, to develop all these opportunities there. And America stayed relatively open and was the land of opportunities for the suppressed Europeans for the whole 19th century. But gradually, obviously, especially on the western coast, there started the first kind of anti-foreigner racism, especially against Chinese. First one was the 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act, and many people call the 1924 Act now the Japanese Exclusion Act or the Asian Exclusion Act. So it was very anti-Asian racism in America from 82 against the Chinese to 24 against the Japanese. And here is my first claim. This anti-Japanese laws, it was not the first one. There was already segregation for Japanese in San Francisco in schooling. And there was obviously also then this so-called gentleman's agreement to somehow find a compromise with Japan, because the Japanese government and the Japanese people, they were really very angry that they were treated like tertiary citizens, not even citizens, like subhuman beings in America. This is the fact. Yeah? This exclusion was extremely painful for the Japanese public. And it was seen as an insult, and the consequences were really hard. Yeah? Because this Japan Exclusion Act is a direct consequence that Japan was an ally of the Western world. It was an ally of America and the UK in the First World War. But as you will certainly know, in the Second World War, it was no longer an ally. It was the second enemy. Yeah? The Asian War, it was a terrible enemy. It was really a very tough struggle in the World War II. And I will talk about all this as well, but anyhow, it's well known. So, and where, why was Japan in the First World War an ally of the Western world and of the free world? And in the Second World War, it was an enemy, which had to be defeated in terrible battles. So famous. Less famous is, of course, the reason why. And look no further, because here's the explanation. It is the Japanese Exclusion Act. Obviously, you know, in Japan also then the elements took power in the 1920s, which said like this. Oh, you know how the West is treating us. Do you know the Japanese Exclusion Act? They don't want to see our faces. They think we are like monkeys. I come to that in a moment. And then they don't want us. Okay, we have to fend off ourselves. Fight Western colonialism in Asia, make our own empire, because in the West we have no place. And this is one of the key origins of World War II. And ask yourself, why is Japan not an ally again in the Second World War? Would have been much easier to defeat the Nazis, wouldn't it? Absolutely. But no, it was not to be. And this law, the 1924, and on the 26th of May, Japan Exclusion Act, which I personally blame for this decision. There might have been other reasons, but, you know, there was no kind of firm decision in the Japanese society to go so extremist and do all these things. And this was not decided in 1924. It was very much the reason, and this kind of anti-Japanese policy of the Americans, of the United States of America. Very much so. One of the evil acts of international law, this 1924. And coming to the European theater, because here also this 1924 act had major repercussions. And I will explain why. Because it is not so obvious, because there was a different connection with the European theater. The first was, of course, that this 1924 Act, what it actually did, yeah, was limiting the migration to 2% of the existing stock of a certain ethnicity, let's say Italians, from the 1890 census. In 1890 in America, it was, of course, a census, and then they said there are so and so much Italians or Russians or Swedes or Germans or British or somehow other groups. And then it was decided to see that the yearly income is limited to exactly 3% in 2021, when the first act was done, and 2%. So it and there was a general limit of 150,000 newcomers implemented. So this quota and the overall cap led, for example, that the immigration from Italy was reduced by 98%. Yes. And here I would like to explain, there's two important economic factors which are at work here. First of all, an important and big economy needs more labor. There is no doubt about. And when you limit the input of a certain economic factor like labor, which America did in 1924. It basically cut itself off from new supply of labor. And then you create a bubble. What's the effect when you cut the supply of new labor into the American labor market? You make labor more expensive and you create a kind of artificial boom of the existing labor. And this is exactly the reason for this 1924 kind of economic boom times, which escalated in this unregulated scenario of the, obviously, the 1929 crisis. Yeah, because when you create a boom and you don't manage it well, and you somehow don't put another resources into a growing economy, you are inflated and you create a bubble which busts ultimately. And it busted so badly. And mark my words, the 29 bubble is very much connected to the 1924 immigration cut and lockdown. So situation was exactly 1924, the decision, limit immigration, 1929, and the boom phase of this 4 or 5 years in between burst spectacularly, and it led to a major protectionist backlash, a currency crisis, and also to massive political consequences, as these crises always do, because that's what we in today's economy call an emerging market debt crisis. What is that? Mainly because of the economic system in the world as it is, America the biggest market, credit for poorer countries is coming from the United States pool of capital. Before it was the UK, and now it's also in Europe because we are much more successful. But in that periods, obviously, it was mainly the United States. So coming, and London to an extent, yeah. But that was also not so successful anymore because it turned with the debts of the First World War into a debtor nation as well. So the situation is, you basically have this excess capital in America, they translate that into loans for Mexico, Japan, and other countries in the emerging world. Yeah, there comes the 29 crisis, then obviously this dries up. And where do these poorer countries then get any kind of credit from? There was no IMF, obviously. There was no global financial institution. So it's either the New York capital market or nobody. And it was nobody then. And that led to major economic consequences in the world, and especially in Central Europe. I will just explain that connection now. Because when you see that, when you go for the election results of Germany in the 20s, here it's important to know that also Germany stabilized after 1924, because in the years from 1918, from the loss of the war to 1924, Germany was basically in constant civil war. The most famous today is the Ludendorff Hitler Putsch, but there were about seven efforts by the communists, by the nationalists to take power in this, what I call, and I think it's the best understanding, it's basically the monarchy factors and the communist factors, which were supported by the Bolshevik Russia, which won its civil war, and they were in a constant civil war for 4 years. This was won in 24, and from that moment, Germany entered a kind of stable 5 years, similar to the American 5 years. It's always called as a golden 20s. It was only 5 years, and it was not golden at all. It were many problems, but there was at least political and economic stability. Hyperinflation was defeated, and the nationalists and the communists were defeated, and there was a stable 5 year situation, which was very, very good. Yeah. But then came the American breakdown, exactly that 29 crisis, and you can see it very real. The Nazi party of Hitler, which was a very minor party in the 20s, and it was defeated in 23 in its first putsch, and then it was electoral insignificant throughout the 5 years until 29, came the big crisis, and it raised until 30%, and with this kind of confused machinations of many, then Hitler could rise to power in 33, in January. Became the chancellor, made the coup d'etat, burned the Reichstag, and he was there, and the world was going as the world was going, and we all know that. But the consequences and the link of the financial crisis with the rise to power, I think it's also quite obvious. Without the great financial crisis, there wouldn't have been any kind of, I normally say Lord Voldemort, but now I mentioned the name. But nevertheless, these terrible events of the 1930s and 40s would not have happened, because there was no way for such an extremist political party to take power without this kind of complete breakdown of the global financial system. And here is absolutely the link to the limit and limitation of the American labor market, because it led to this bubble in the United States. It led to this kind of bubble then plopping in October 29. And the world was in a big emerging market debt crisis and the rise of extremist powers in Germany. And Germany was at that time by far the most important industrial power, of course defeated in World War I and no longer as strong, but it was a huge pool of resources and money and technology, suddenly then governed by a crazy person. Would have never happened without the 29 breakdown of the global financial system, which was a direct result of the cap of migration. Additionally, and there is another very important point to make, the cap in and the limitation, the basically blocking of migration for the Eastern Europeans, for more or less Orthodox Europe, if you want to call, and for Catholic Europe, because of this huge racism against Orthodox Christian and Catholic Christians in America at that time. That was the background, because in that way only the Protestant Christians were seen as good Christians. And that is also one of the sadly often underreported facts about America in that time. It was that basically these countries could not find a ventil, a kind of a safety valve for their excess population. Because obviously all of them were broken by World War I. World War I in Central Europe was the great disaster. It was a really huge destruction of wealth and of disaster, you know, infrastructure, everything was broken. And it took years and years to recover. And in fact, it has not really recovered Central Europe since, I think, when you were honest, you know, we are just in the recovery now. And then in terms of real infrastructure, real connectivity, real integration in the world economy. So we lost this century. But in fact, what is happening, you know, the population growth is continuing. This was the time before contraception, obviously. You know, there was huge population growth in Italy and in Eastern Europe. And that's quite normal because it was, were farming communities. They were not living in the world of urban 2021. They were living in the countryside. Many children was quite normal. And the economy was in no way, as in fact in Eastern Europe and in Southern Europe, it has not been for centuries a really good economy, if we are serious in that reason. It was always an exporter of people, or basically the people turned then into armies, and it was this kind of economic crisis we had constantly. And only the safety valve of this opportunity of the land of the free of America was, of course, in the 19th century, and the thing to do for entrepreneuring people who were not born in wealth and were the second or third children of a farming community somewhere in Southern Europe or in Eastern Europe. And obviously, there was also a lot of authoritarian suppression of the many minorities. All over Southern and Eastern Europe, we have minorities which were not fitting in these new states, because they were somehow Hungarians living in Czechoslovakia, or there were Ukrainians living in Hungary, or there were whatever Croatians living in a state they didn't want, and so on. You can make 100 examples where this new kind of state structure in 1919 was not fitting all the groups. And also before, many of the people were suppressed already under different regimes, especially in Hungary or especially in the Russian Empire. And this was a complete disaster, as unfortunately we are in Europe. Yeah. So where to go? What to do? Migrate to Germany. It was also mainly an agricultural country. And when you are not from Germany, you were not so welcome. There was only America. And so many went. too many seemingly for America, which, by the way, still today is a very non-densely, very rarely, sparsely populated country. Contrary to common myth, America has about 30 persons per per square kilometer, and in Europe we have 90, and in fact it's absolutely sparsely populated even to this day. And I don't want to shock my listeners when they listen to me, but, you know, mathematically and economically, America can have a billion people living in that continent and more. It's not a problem. It's just a question of economics and politics. But economically, now it's 350 and 330, and there will be a billion Americans one day. And I have no doubt about it. It will take some years, and it will take maybe two centuries, but it will happen. Because it's simply so attractive, it's simply so magnetic, and it's simply so successful. And I think all this is very good. But obviously you have to organize it and to do it well. So, and it's not just the country of the white Anglo-Saxon elite of Protestant religion. No, no, no. So we have this kind of connection of this terrible act of the 26th of May, which has led to these terrible consequences, really terrible consequences. Locking all the Central Europeans in their newfound states with nowhere to go is a recipe for civil strife and political revolution. And it was. Yeah. And it led to a lot of instability in Eastern and Central Europe and in Southern Europe. And it was. Yeah. And it led to disaster. Additionally, obviously, the connection with the financial crisis and the rise of the terrible dictator to power in Berlin. And we have the Second World War explained very simply with the 26th of May 1924 and the decision by the US Congress. And now my Americans say, oh, that is not true. Oh, we had this wonderful country and all these dirty Eastern Europeans, Southern Europeans wanted to come. We had to block it. And actually, there was not a lot of resistance in the US Congress. And even President Coolidge signed that law and easily. And it was also in the tradition because it already started in 1907 with the first limitation of Japan and with the McKinley assassination of 1901. And because he was killed by American of Polish origin. And then it was claimed on the Polish. Interesting. And then obviously there was all these efforts in the US Congress, which was vetoed by Wilson and by Taft, to block all the immigrants who cannot read and write. So illiterates to block. The presidents have said, no, if you cannot read and write, probably you can still work on a farm and you can, by the way, learn it. And so, but in US Congress, they unfortunately succeeded in 1917. They stopped the migration for everybody who could not read. And so on and so on. Yeah, 21 was the another law, and 24th was this worst law. And it took until 1965 to repeal it. Yeah. And this is more or less the kind of, you know, and when you talk about the reasons, obviously, there was all this kind of anti-Jewish feeling, anti-Semitist, anti-Bolshevist, anti-German feeling. And you find so many reasons to be justifying protectionism in migration with all kind of ideological, religious, ethnicity arguments, because the foreign seems to be always the common denominator most easy to be found for justifying your racism, which you should not do, that many people know already back then. But the foreigner, you can be against it because that's anti-American and so on and so on. And the consequences were, of course, nefarious. And when you see how expensive the Second World War was for America and how expensive the Cold War was for America, and thanks for defending us. But with better policy back home, maybe all this would simply not have happened. Yeah, and think about that for one moment. Isn't it mind-boggling when you think that all these terrible events of the 20th century might not have happened with more and more serious policy debate in the United States? I mean, I'm not in counterfactual history or alternative history. You know, it's happened as it is, and we all know it. And I will also talk about all the situation of the Second World War, Cold War, and all these crises. But, you know, one thing is to know the history. But the other thing is to draw the right conclusions and the reasonable conclusions on it and understand why things really happened and why the Second World War happened and why all these terrible things happened and this confrontation and this lost century. You know, when we look back and see America locking its markets from European and Asian migration, it's one of the most important reasons for all this terrible 20th century. And that's why I call so much America and Europe now, because basically we are like a second United States now in Europe. Of course, we are a bit different. I know all these things. Yeah. Don't worry, I'm not confused. Yeah, I know our differences, but in basic terms, we are as rich as the Americans, not as rich, 30% less, but we are like a second America in everything but many other things, unfortunately. Yeah, but in basic terms, yeah. And we are now repeating the mistakes of America of the 1920s. Blocking, 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 blocking. Closing borders, cutting migration, everything foreign is evil, yeah. And this is so wrong, and this will have very negative consequences if it's continued. And we should learn from the history of the failure of the American migration disaster of 24. And we should be more open. Obviously, I know not everybody in the world, not all 8 billion people can suddenly tomorrow live in Vienna. You know, I know that. I'm not confused. And it's a typical ridiculous argument of many who criticize me to say, oh, Günther wants open borders and he wants everybody from Africa to come to Vienna. No, I never said that. Yeah, but I say openness is the basis for prosperity. I say openness creates innovation, contacts, understanding, networks, and that's very good. And obviously, we have to keep the law, and also everybody who comes new has to keep the law. That's the idea of the law. It's not voluntary to obey the law. But it's total nonsense to block new people to come. Obviously, there must be some kind of limitation, but not on ethnic quotas, not on kind of general caps, because anyhow, not everybody wants to come at once. And we have to help everybody who wants to come to also be well integrated, understand the laws, understand the opportunity, understand the market, understand the labor code, and so on and so on. There's some effort. But everybody is ultimately an asset. Everybody wants to work, contribute, and live better. It's not that anybody comes only for some migration and welfare benefits. Yeah? Most of these people come for security reasons, because there are bombs thrown by Russia on them, or there is some Islamist terrorism in Afghanistan or Iraq. This is the reason they come. They love our safety. And so we have to create secure conditions of living also everywhere in the world. Absolutely. This is the most important priority. It's peace, by the way, not climate change. It's peace, which is the most important priority in the world. Huh? And that we have countries like Syria or Myanmar or Sudan, where we care too little to create stable political conditions, huh? Or fight dictatorship. That's our eternal shame. And that's also the reason for 2015 and so on. It's not climate change because the Syrians leave Syria, as some try recently to explain. And I cannot believe such intellectual dishonesty. It's so outrageous. It's barrel bombs and gas of their own state, which forces people to run away from their houses and their lives, their economy and their friends. Yeah? And quite understandable so. Wouldn't you run? When the state that is meant to protect you throws some barrel bombs of gas on you and your children? I mean, yeah, it's so bad. Huh? And it's so bad that we are not allowing, we are then doing all this populist reaction and then all these other things. I don't want to go into it. But the point is, we have to be open. We have to focus on that. And we have to keep the system open. because closing the system will lead to a lot of indirect negative effects on our own economies and in the countries in crisis, in between, like in the Balkans, for example, where we then externalize our blocking to let the people sit on islands in Greece or in Bosnian winter quarters, which are not made for the winter and it's very cold there. And then we say, oh, but we care for women's rights. We are very good in LBDG. That's really important. Yeah. And the climate is the most important. Yeah. And we tell the world how to live. Yeah. But we are not able to help some poor refugees from Syria stuck in Bosnia or in a Greek island. What kind of morality is that? What kind of selective intellectual dishonesty is that? I can hardly understand. When I understand all the things, I'm not stupid. Yeah? I understand the power of populism and racism and xenophobia and all these things and jingoist kind of fighting the foreign and protecting our native people. But that's what it's called. It's nativism and populism. And I wanted to tell in this series as well how the 26th of May has led into 1924, exactly that forces released, yeah, by the threat of the red scares and, you know, the World War One chaos, like Syria. Europe was like Syria today in many ways for the Americans back then. And then they said, I have a really very good idea. Close all the borders. And then we had to face World War II because of this racism and bad economics combined to a toxic mix leading to all these crises I have outlined in this one. And I will talk a lot about the negative consequences of closing borders and somehow claiming, protecting the native population against newcomers and the consequent disasters the world is facing and will face again if we continue with this failed policy. So much for the 26th of May, 1924. May it live in infamy forever and think about how with better policy we could save so many lives and we could be much richer altogether, much more successful. And that would be the key phase and its openness, the basis for prosperity. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.